This is Friendly Fire, a voice for veterans. Trump is out. Biden is in. Can all the king's horses and all the king's men put an immigration policy back together again? With us today are Robert V. Lauren, Maurice Martin, two veterans for peace working to help deported veterans pick up the pieces of their lives after the U.S. judicial system turned its back on them. Stay tuned. And welcome to Friendly Fire, a voice for veterans. I'm your host, Don Kimball. A pleasure to have you along today. We're recording from a remote location we call the Sacred Feather Studios, and we're very proud and pleased to be on KURU-FM 89.1 Silver City, New Mexico, or GMCR.org. And now let's go to our interview with Robert Vivar and Maurice Martin. With us calling from Tijuana, Mexico, is Robert Vivar. Robert is the executive director of the Unified U.S. Deported Veterans, which are, again, located in Tijuana, Mexico. And this is a part of the Deported Veterans Advocacy Project, which is a national priority for Veterans for Peace. Robert immigrated with his family from Mexico to the United States when he was age six. He was deported in 2003, came back to the United States, and was deported again in 2013. Robert, thanks for being with us here on Friendly Fire.
Thank you, Don. It's a pleasure to be back here with you once again.
Yes, it's good to see you again. Right now, there's a new bill pending in Congress, H.R. 536, hashtag the New Way Forward Act. And tell us a little bit about this exciting bill that will help bring deported veterans. Now, you're not a veteran, but you do have a son in the Air Force, and you are working very closely with, of course, veterans, because you're the executive director down there. So you're also an associate member of Veterans for Peace. Tell us a little bit about this new bill, H.R. 536, hashtag the New Way Forward Act, and what it's going to do to help bring deported veterans home. And then we'll talk a little bit about who is a deported veteran? What is a deported veteran? How did veterans get deported? Go ahead, sir.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for that opportunity, Don. We're very excited about the New Way Forward Act introduced by Congressman Chuy Garcia out of Illinois. And we're very proud that it is gaining continued support. At this time, I believe it has over 40 co-sponsors and growing. And we look forward to continuing this campaign to get more sponsors to come on board. We love this bill because it's not only an immigration reform bill, but it's also a crime reform bill. What I mean by that is that it's a bill to reform the prison to deportation pipeline that has affected so many members of our community, of our immigrant community, and of course, along the way, many of our veterans, non-citizen veterans, that were willing to, put on the uniform of the United States military, something that only about 1% of the U.S. population are willing to do. But our non-citizen veterans, we're willing to do that to defend the Constitution of the United States. And this bill, while it does not mention directly how it would assist deported veterans in the repatriation, some of the prohibitions on it, should it be enacted, would afford many, and I mean probably more than 60% of our deported veterans to be able to be repatriated, to come home to the country they swore to defend.
And I don't think a lot of people know, and we're not really sure what the numbers are, of how many veterans have been deported over the last 10 years. Now, I've known about deported veterans only since 2018 when I came to visit you folks down in Tijuana and learned about
the injustices
that has been done to people who have served and then been deported, many for minor drug crimes. And among things that the Deported Veterans Advocacy Project calls for is legislation to clearly state the following shall be nationals. And nationals are defined as, in the United States Code, a citizen of the United States or a person who though not a citizen of the United States, owes permanent allegiance to the United States of America. Service members have taken a permanent oath of allegiance. We've raised our right hands. All veterans raise their right hand and take a permanent oath of allegiance as part of their enlistment that says, you know, we shall defend and protect the Constitution of the United States of America. And this oath of enlistment is almost identical to the oath of naturalization. So therefore, we think Deported Veterans Advocacy Project and those of us who support this, that all U.S. veterans should be granted national status automatically. This is not the case. And can you give us an idea of how many people, how many veterans have who signed on the dotted line to defend and protect the Constitution of the United States were then, after their service, maybe got into trouble with the law a little bit, did some time in jail or prison, and then were deported to countries, some of them where they didn't even speak the language and had never lived?
Absolutely, Don. There isn't any kind of an accurate figure. The last figures that were revealed, you know, by different studies, different organizations, educational programs such as the University of San Diego and so forth, the ACLU, it was determined that documented was slightly over 400 veterans deported around the globe to over 40 different countries. We know that there's probably thousands of veterans that have been deported. Part of the problem is that Department of Homeland Security does not track those that are U.S. military veterans that are in deportation proceedings or have been deported. We believe that if they wanted to, they could track it. When a person is going through removal proceedings, of course, they're going to complete a cancellation of removal petition. And on that petition, it asks you, you know, point blank, are you a veteran? Did you serve? Where did you serve? And so forth. So that information, they do have it in paper, you know, and it's a matter of them extracting that information from their databases to find out exactly how many veterans have been deported. Why they want it, they don't want to do it? Probably because they don't want to scare the public as to how many veterans they have deported unjustly. But we know, like I said again, that we believe that there are thousands around the world.
Robert, tell us what H.R. 536, hashtag the New Way Forward Act, will do to not only bring deported veterans home, but also to keep veterans from being deported.
What we're excited about this particular bill is that, number one, it raises the bar for deportable crimes from 1 year to 5 years. Right now, if you were sentenced to a crime of 365 days or more, that's considered an aggravated felony and automatic grounds for removal. With this new legislation, it would raise that bar so that only those that were convicted and sentenced to a crime of 5 years or more would be considered an aggravated felony and on grounds for removal. However, the other thing that we like about this bill is that it returns prosecutorial jurisdiction to immigration judges, which, according to the GAO report, they should have had some discretion up to now. However, that discretion was never followed through, according to the report. However, with the enactment of this bill, it'll give full prosecutorial discretion to immigration judges to take into account the person, for example, in our case, military service, combat service, family ties, you know, being a productive member of the community, paying your taxes, being a positive person in your community, not just somebody that perhaps got into trouble because they had problems integrating back into civilian life after military life. You know, Don, something that a lot of people do not understand, and, you know, their first thought is, well, they must have done something to get deported. And, you know, we don't think about the whole process. You know, most of our deported veterans entered the military at a very young age, 17, 18, 19 years old. Young, naive, you know, all-American kid, your next-door neighbor playing football, involved in, you know, in school clubs, you know, just an all-around kid, just like any of us. And when, you know, when you enter the military, what happens to you? You're trained to be aggressive. You're trained to be violent. You're trained to kill. Many of them are asked to go overseas and kill, and you do go and kill. Many see their buddies, their basic training buddies, cut down right before them. Just imagine the amount of trauma that that person is being fed into their conscience, into their mind. And to expect them, when they leave military service, to leave that behind and return back to society as that naive 17, 18, 19-year-old kid is incomprehensible that you would think that they would be able to do that without some kind of issues. And those issues we see in the results of having problems to integrate back into civilian life, resort to, you know, drinking, self-medicating, domestic violence. That's what they've been taught, to be violent, to be aggressive. You know, if you're a citizen veteran, you make a mistake, you pay your time, you pay your fine, do your time, and you go home to your family for a second chance. And with non-citizen veterans, they do their time, they pay their fine, they get their legal residence taken away from them. That's double jeopardy, paying twice for the same crime. But then again, they pay three times because now they're exiled to the country they were born in, which most of them left at a very young age. They don't even speak the language, at least not fluently. They're taken away from, you know, the country they swore to defend, from their family, the U.S. citizen children that they're being torn away from their life.
And hopefully, Robert, H.R. 536, hashtag the New Way Forward Act, is going to help amend some of these injustices to veterans who serve this country and were deported and are trying to get back to their country and to their loved ones. I'd like to bring in to the conversation Maurice Martin. Maurice is calling us from the Bay Area. He's originally from Chicago. He is a United States veteran, and he is on the steering committee for the Deported Veterans Advocacy Project.
Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Maurice Martin. I'm in Berkeley, California. I'm a U.S. Army veteran, Vietnam era, although I didn't serve in Vietnam. I was in Central America. And currently, I'm working with on the board of our steering committee for the Deported Veterans Advocacy Project that is working closely with Unified U.S. Deported Veterans, which is Robin is one of the co-chairs there with Hector and the rest of our team there. And I'm the Northern California coordinator for our deported veterans. So that's sort of who I am. I've been working with the deported veterans since 2009, 2010, meeting with Jan Rubin, who's also on our board, and Willie Hager and George Johnson and a couple others. And we've been working with Robert and those guys. We had the bunker, and now we have our main office down in Baja, Tijuana, Mexico, in the downtown area of Tijuana, just across the Pedway, the border. So we've been working on a number of issues there, not only trying to identify and support our deported veterans as they, we have some long timers, long haulers, sound like the coronavirus. We have the long timers who've been deported since the 90s, I would think. Robert, you can correct me if I'm wrong. And so from 20 years ago to the current day. And so we have maybe 70 of 100 that we've identified coming to the table with a variety. Many of them don't speak the language. They don't have any jobs. So the Deported Veterans Advocacy Project is dedicated first to help give support to our deported veterans in Tijuana, and then the 30 different countries that they have been, other veterans have been deported to, and also giving support to those who are in detention, basically just trying to get them recognized and having the Border Patrol and those guys, customs agents, just ask the question, are you a veteran? And if they even did that simple act, then a number of things will be triggered. One, access to legal support. And two, they, by law, they would have to be considered before they got deported. They would have to go through another legal process to identify what their legal service was, their service connection, and that sort of thing before any deported veteran. So there's a couple of steps they would need to do. Along with that particular effort is that we've been working with our Baja Tijuana Unified U.S. Deported Veterans and their efforts in working with migrants and asylum seekers there in Tijuana. It's very egregious down there. Those guys have been helping supply food and water and some infrastructure and clothing and that sort of thing. So it's especially challenging over the last year with the coronavirus. They've been having struggles, but they continue to work with those who have even less than themselves. It's amazing that our deported veterans are still representing our country well when our country is not even doing their job. So I'm very proud of the work and the efforts those guys are doing. So our Deported Veterans Advocacy Project, along with Unified U.S. Deported Veterans, our main focus is does twofold. And this is very simple. It's not very difficult at all. One, stop the detention of deported veterans. Stop the detention of veterans. Two, stop the deportation of veterans. This is not about who's deserving, whether they honorable discharge, less than honorable discharge, no honorable discharge. This is not, the issue is not discharge. The issue is service and deportation. So we believe that if you raise your hand, the country should do, it was a two-way oath that not only did we serve our country, but if we served our country and then returned home, that we too, we expect our country to keep their promise of duty, honor, and service to us. And that's all that we're asking for the United States to keep their promise, the same promise that we gave. Many of our deported veterans there can access medical care. They can access this pensions and things that they so not only deserve, but have earned. So they're being disconnected. I think it was shame on us that you can get health care and access to your benefits, but if you die over there, you can be brought home and give full military service. That seems a little backwards and a little off-brand to me. And our Deported Veterans Advocacy Project are working with congressional leaders. We're working with nonprofits. We're working with the Black Caucus, Hispanic Caucus. We're working with anybody, the Democratic Women Voters, anybody who's willing to work with us, retrieve and release all our deported veterans back into the arms of their family and community. And that's where my effort lies.
Well, Maurice, thank you for letting us know what you've been doing and what Veterans for Peace has been doing, working with a lot of different people and a lot of different groups to help bring deported veterans home. And I had mentioned earlier that there's a very exciting mural project that's going to honor deported people and veterans from Fresno County, and that's debuting Sunday. Robert, why don't you talk a little bit about the exciting mural project that you are actually sitting in front of right now, and unfortunately our listeners won't be able to see this mural, but it's such an exciting project, and there's so many creative people, a lot of young people that are behind this project, and the murals are going to be appearing all throughout the country. Veterans for Peace Chapter 1 in Maine is going to sponsor one. I think they're $300 to sponsor a mural. Go ahead and tell us about the grand debut of the mural honoring deported people and veterans that's going to be in Fresno tomorrow.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Don. Actually, we have two mural installations tomorrow in Fresno. The first one is going to be on Fulton Street at the Fulton Mall. The second one is also there in Fresno at the 403 West Olive Street. The reason that these murals are so important, Don, is that my colleagues, Liz Antana from UC Davis, who is also the director of the Playas Mural Project and also was part of the Humanizing Deportation Project, which now consists of over 240 digital stories on deported persons, including many deported veterans, along with Jenny Martinez, who is also a PhD candidate at Oregon State University. Their dedication and their love for our community has made this possible, along with their vision. And the way this begun, Don, was we heard President Biden talking about his 100-day immigration bill, and we started to see at a very stage that this bill was not including our departed veterans, as President Biden had stated in his campaign promises. And it was not including either those families that had been separated by deportation. So therefore, we thought perhaps through a mural project such as this, putting a face in the stories of the affected people across the country, would be able to generate enough support for a couple of different actions that we are working on. The main purpose of this mural project is to bring attention to President Biden, to remind him to fulfill his campaign promises, bring deported veterans home, reunite families. And the way that we're asking for it to be done, number one, is President Biden sign an executive order in the likes of the request from Senator Tammy Duckworth, an executive order bring our deported veterans home, stop deportation of veterans now. However, we know an executive order is only a band-aid, and therefore legislation is needed. That is why we support H.R. 536, the New Way Forward Act. We asked Congressman Garcia in the press conference we held when we unveiled the mural for consideration of including in H.R. 536 an amendment to 8 U.S.C. Code 1101 Alpha 22, which is what you spoke about earlier, Don. We believe, and it should be clarified in this amendment, that when a person took the oath of enlistment, they at that point put their loyalty and allegiance to the Constitution of the United States, and therefore should be granted the status of a national, if not a U.S. citizen, and that should be retroactive to the day that they completed their basic training. And why basic training? Because in a recent ACLU case that was won in DOD versus, in SAMA versus Department of Defense, it calls for a policy to be enacted by the Department of Defense and USCIS to establish liaison offices in different military bases, and if not, designate a liaison officer at the bases. So when a new recruit enters basic training, they are given full opportunity to initiate their citizenship process. By the time they complete basic training, they will have completed their citizenship process. They can graduate as a graduate of the military service, and at that point also as a U.S. citizen. And we are asking Congressman Garcia to consider including that part of amending the ADUSC code, to which his response was very positive. Like, that's part of our ask at every one of these mural installations. People rally around the installations. They contact their friends, their neighbors, organizations that they may have communication with, and urge them to contact their elected officials to support the executive order and the New Way Forward Act, and to also support Congressman Garcia to include this amendment in his piece of legislation. We want to make sure also, Don, very clearly that in this piece of legislation, a pathway to our deported and returned youth are allowed. In other words, those that for some reason or other should have qualified for DACA, they didn't qualify, they were deported or returned, we need to have a pathway for them to return back. They were taken to the U.S. at a very young age, raised in the U.S., and then discarded. Also, we want to make sure that our U.S. citizen children do not continue to suffer being raised without one or both of their parents. These are U.S. citizen children whose rights are being violated by not allowing them to have their parents there with them to raise them. This is something that is very meaningful to us and uncomprehensible, just like deported veterans who allow our U.S. citizen children to live this kind of trauma.
Yeah, no, it doesn't just affect the people who are deported. I know that you have a son in the Air Force that's stationed in the United States, and you're not able to go visit him or your family, and your case is now before the California Supreme Court. You're expecting a ruling any day on your immigration status. Tell us a little bit about that, and then we'll bring Maurice back into the conversation, and he can tell us some of the upcoming events and places that he's going to be going and things that him and others are going to be doing to support H.R. 536, hashtag the New Way Forward Act, and the Leave No One Behind mural project.
Absolutely, Don. My case is before the California Supreme Court. We feel very positive because the Attorney General's office, in their reply brief, have indicated that there was an error made in my appeal process, and therefore they are suggesting the appeal decision be reversed. Not only is this a great opportunity for me to be able to, God willing, very soon be able to go back to my family in the U.S., but I'm very excited because it is going to be a published opinion. And we are very much waiting for that published opinion, because that published opinion is going to determine how wide Penal Code, California Penal Code 1473.7 is going to assist others that were in my situation to reopen their criminal charge, to be able to vacate it or plead it down to an immigration safe plea, and be able to return, reopen their immigration case, and be able to return. That is something that we're very grateful for Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez Fletcher, who designed this particular penal code. And we're very excited about it because this is a possibility for the reunification of many deported persons, including many, many of our deported veterans that would be able to be reunited with the U.S. citizen family, the U.S. citizen children and grandchildren.
Certainly an exciting development, something that's long overdue. Maurice, tell us a little bit about your plans in the future here.
Thank you, Don, and Robert, thank you so much. But before I tell you what we're going to do, let me back up. I agree with everything that Robert said. So the first thing is that when the whether you undocumented and you enter into the U.S. military, you are designated as a U.S. national. The egregious thing is, and once you separated from it, and that continues to be so as long as you're on active duty. But as soon as you separate from the military, unbeknownst to our veterans, they believing that they will remain that national status, they are separated from their national status at the time that they are separated from the U.S. military. So that is such an egregious sort of issue and a big trick that they're paying on those who are undocumented that put their life, put both sweat and blood into the ground for our country. The second thing is what Robert was speaking about on a national effort, that if he gets a positive decision from the Supreme Court, that would set a president that will be able to be uniformed around the country. So that will be a big help. But in the meantime, we're attacking it both not from this national effort, but also through the states. We have been successful in working with a number of our deported veterans and getting. So those who are out there and thinking, how can I help? You can write to your governor or your state representative saying, hey, there are deported veterans from my state. We would like for you to take a look at it and pardon them so that they are able to come back and join their families. So we are also working with a national thing to, again, as I mentioned earlier, for those who are, we have an untold number. We don't know the number of veterans in detention. We would like for them to be released or at least trigger the fact that they're veterans and be able to get those legal services that they're supposed to be able to have. So that's a couple of things.
This is Friendly Fire, a voice for veterans. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Friendly Fire on KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico, and on the web at gmcr.org. And now, back to Friendly Fire with Don Kimball.
And welcome back to Friendly Fire. Our guest today, Robert Vivar, he's calling us from Tijuana, Mexico, and Maurice Martin, he's calling us from the Bay Area. They're both Veterans for Peace, and they are both working with the Deported Veterans Advocacy Project to bring back deported veterans. We'll go back to our conversation with Maurice now.
So everything that we're doing now, along with the Mural Project, and here in where I am in Northern California, and San Francisco, Berkeley, Oakland, in that area in Napa Valley, we're working on the project as well. But with my chapter, as with many chapters with Veterans for Peace, we're an aging community. So asking them to go out and do murals and close connections and stuff is a little bit challenging to them. But we're hoping towards the summer, and those like myself who live in a college community, I'm here in UC Berkeley, we have University of San Francisco, we have a number of universities here that has veterans, young veterans in them. So we're trying to do a push coming up this summer, along with Robert and Hector, and doing Zoom calls where we can to promote the Mural Project, to bring attention to their fellow soldiers that they've served with. And in an effort to bring them home. But like UC Berkeley and Davis and some of the others, we're working with empty nests. People haven't returned to school here. So once we sort of get back up to some physical strength, we'll be putting forth more of the murals, and you'll see a lot more of them. But moving forward, I'll be down in Tijuana, Mexico with George Johnson and Jan and Robert and Hector and Lupita and Rosa, all the people there, and trying to strategize on what's going to be our best effort and identifying our congressional, giving support to those who are signing on to the bill, as you and Robert described, but also identifying others that may be our partners. And so what we're hoping to do when we go to Washington, D.C., I think we're leaving on the 17th or 18th. We'll be there 3 or 4 days. It's challenging now because the state, the capital, let's say, well, the national capital is closed. So we're hoping to identify them with their representatives and those who are there to have a large press conference to bring attention to the bills that Robert described and you did, Don, and get them to support this and bring in more public advertising, bring attention to our family members who are important and need to be back with their families. One of the things that Robert described excellently is that, you know, we're separating mothers and fathers and children. But one of the things that we don't know is that we have children who are born here, they're deporting the parents and leaving the children alone. So we're breaking up families in every direction when we should be bringing families together. We seem to, with our last administration, been finding ways to break the families up. And we're hoping that working with the new administration, the Biden and Harris administration, that we can bring them together. So we will be out there, and we encourage everyone to contact your friends and family and say, hey, look, there's this bill that's traveling around. We want you, you congressional people, we want you to support this bill. You can do that through your local congressional office. You can do it by writing the national office with your representatives, or do both. So what we're trying to do is put a full court press. We've gotten a lot of traction. We've been working on this since 2009. Over the last 3 years or so, we finally started being heard. We're not on the soapbox now. We actually have a large megaphone that we'll be able to reach into the communities. And we're working with our faith partners, the nonprofit partners. We're working with local government and national state representatives, as Robert has been talking about, and now our national partners. So our effort in Washington, D.C. for the 3 or 4 days that we'll be there, have identified the congressional people to sign on to the bill, those who have not, and then give support to those who have signed on the bill, and let them know that their constituents and the service, the U.S. service people are behind them as well. We respect all veterans. Thank you for your service. We're going to put to the test and say, if you thank us for our service, then bring us home.
All right, Maurice. So you and other Veterans for Peace are going to be traveling in a lobbying effort to Washington, D.C. to support H.R. 536, and the Leave No One Behind Mural Project is supporting that also. Robert, tell us a little bit more about the Mural Project and how that's going to help get the word out about what's happened to deported veterans, please. Go ahead, Robert.
Sure. Thank you, Don. The whole the Mural Project, Don, is to make noise now, today, not tomorrow, not next week, not during the summer, not next year, is to make noise right now. Raise the voice right now. Why? Because if we wait till after the 100 days of the Biden immigration plan, we feel we are going to be left out. The noise has to be made before the Biden 100-day period ends. That is why it is very important, and we're working very diligently between my colleagues and myself and our coalition effort to install as many murals across the country before May the 1st. Right now we have the first mural installed in TJ, two murals in Bakersfield. We have two coming up tomorrow in Fresno. We have probably about four in the Los Angeles area in the next few days. Phoenix, El Paso, Texas, Waukegan, Illinois, Detroit, Michigan, New York, we have coming up here pretty soon. The whole idea, we need to make the noise now. We cannot wait. We cannot wait till an immigration bill is signed and passed. If we wait, we're out of the picture. Then we might as well pack our lunch and go home if we're going to wait till after the 100 days. We need to take action now. We need this to reach President Biden's ears before that immigration plan is finalized.
Robert, it's very hard to cut through all the noise. There's so much happening right now with the immigration crisis. NBC News reports that an average of 565 migrant children are coming to the United States every day. CNN says that there have been 400,000 migrant children that have come to this country since 2003. So it's hard for veterans who have been deported unjustly to Mexico and other countries to be able to break through all this noise. But rather than feeling that you're in competition with folks who are trying to immigrate to the United States, instead, to your credit and everybody's credit down there and Veterans for Peace, you have been in solidarity with all these folks who are massed at the border right now trying to escape poverty, crime, things of that nature, and immigrate to the United States. Tell us a little bit about things that your chapter down there has done in solidarity with all the folks that have been massed at the border that are trying to get to the United States.
Absolutely, Don. Ever since the first influx of migrants arrived, Veterans for Peace stepped up to the plate. The San Diego Veterans for Peace chapter has been an incredible supporter, along with Veterans for Peace National, all come together in support. You know, some of the things that we've done is went out and put together lunch bags, sandwich bags, you know, cooked meals for them. You know, we go out, in a community and deliver, you know, up to 300, you know, sandwiches, feed, you know, a couple, 300 people, gather blanket donations, deliver blankets, anything that, you know, that is within the possibility. And right now we've been assisting our migrants that are camped out at the Fed West Chaparral border crossing, which we estimate there's about 1,500 of them. We've been supporting them also through the organization that I'm working with, VIA International. We have a mutual ecology program. It's workshops that teaches our migrant community on how to prepare nutritious meals at a very low cost. Well, one of the programs where we are conducting these workshops actually took it a little bit further and installed a kitchen there at the migrant camp. And they're feeding on a daily basis over 1,500 people a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And you know, we've been able to help them somewhat in that process. We'd definitely love to help them a little bit more, but we do whatever we can. But, you know, again, efforts with Veterans for Peace and the collaboration of VIA International, my employer, we've been able to, you know, do a little grain of salt. And just recently, you know, on Thursday, we were able to deliver over 250 toys to the children that are camped out there. you know, it's priceless to see the smile on that little child, you know, to bring a little bit of happiness to them, you know, in this disgraceful situation that they've been put into.
An absolutely incredible situation down there. Is it your experience that most migrant children who are coming across the border are coming to the border with family members and then making the crossing by themselves? Because, I mean, it's scary enough to think of an adult or a teenager making this perilous journey, but to think of thousands upon thousands of children being alone and being by themselves and making a crossing, it's unfathomable. And what's your experience with that?
You know, a couple of things that, you know, unfortunately, some of the media outlets tend to exaggerate things. You know, everybody wants to sell their news piece. The reality is that the unaccompanied children that are arriving at the border are arriving on the southeastern Texas border. How many exactly are arriving? I really would not be able to know. I do know, though, that from previous information that we have received, the amount of children that are arriving are very comparable to the seasonal amount of migrants that are arriving. The difference is that from several years ago is that there's thousands more Border Patrol agents than to what there was a few years back. There's many, many more Border Patrol agents now, and the influx of migrants coming across, we understand, is less. That is by information that we've received from other sources, and that's on the southeastern Texas border. Here in Mexico, we see very few unaccompanied children coming through. There are some, absolutely, but they're not overrunning the border or any such thing. They're in those camps, like the one here at the border, waiting to go through the front door through a legal process that was halted by the Trump administration. And now the Biden administration is scrambling, trying to put together a plan that would revert back to a lawful process that is governed by the United Nations. Worked on, but in the meantime, we have this cap here at the border, but the people are waiting for that process to be initiated, and they understand that there is an issue with COVID, which is delaying it, but they also need accurate information from the U.S. government as to when and how that process is going to be renewed so they can apply for political asylum, for protection from persecution. At the moment, the only people that are being allowed to enter the U.S. are those that had a previous court case that were returned to Mexico with the Remain in Mexico Protocol Program, the MPP, Mexico Protocol Protection. Those are the only ones that are being allowed back into the U.S. And the process is that they have to register with an organization, UNCHR. Once they register, they are given a call for an interview, and after that interview, they are told when they should show up to a filter shelter where they're given a COVID test, and if they the results of the COVID test are negative, then they are allowed to the United States where another COVID test is issued, and from there, they're allowed to remain in the U.S. and continue their asylum process, but that's only for those that had a pending court case that were under the MPP program. Those additional people, which are the majority that are camped out here in Tijuana at the border, are those people seeking to apply for that legal process of asylum because of persecution, because their lives are in danger. Right now, we have been dealing with we've got very good contact with a lot of the organizations helping out, but in particular, his four children, ages, I believe, 22, 20, 17, and 16, are here at the border applying for humanitarian parole. Their mother and younger daughter are missing and presumed to have been killed. These are the type of people that are here waiting at the border. They're not here because they want to be. You know, you're not going to want to be out here at the border, you know, sleeping in a tent, you know, under the elements of, you know, pouring rain with no adequate, you know, hygiene facilities, restrooms, showers, and so forth, just for the heck of it.
Yeah, thank you, Robert, and the rest of the folks of the chapter down there for the work that you have been doing in supporting people who are in desperate need. And it's really, you've also provided a potable water to folks. And tell us a little bit about the COVID situation there as far as yourself and other deported veterans. Have you been able to get the vaccine or be tested?
Absolutely. The COVID issue is like, you know, everywhere else, it is starting to get better. Even though for a while there, COVID was very high numbers here in town. However, one thing that was very noticeable is that any business you go to, any place where, you know, public is allowed, a lot of, you know, safety protocols in place, you know, having your temperature read, making sure that there's sanitizer before entering any business, before having any kind of contact, making sure everybody was wearing face covers. So that's all been in place. As far as the vaccines here in our town, they just started administering them, as a matter of fact, as of today, for people 60 years of age or older. You know, long time overdue. You know, you can imagine the lines are tremendous. But hopefully the vaccines will continue to be administered and we can get more people immunized to start really eradicating the spread of COVID out here.
Well, we hope that you are all safe and well and you'll be able to come back to the United States just as soon as possible. Go ahead, Maurice.
I just want to add a quick thing. I just wanted to sort of coattail on top of Robert's. We have an immigration, not a problem, but we do have a situation, but one we need to wake up to. And we have to recognize that the United States is not working in isolation. This is an international problem. And there's two things with the United States. We have a big sign in front of our door that says, give me your tithe, you're hungry. And then we tell you, but yeah, but just not you. That has not been our history with the potato family, the Irish and the potato family, or those in Europe that were escaping disease and stuff. So this is not all new stuff to us. We have a way to doing it. What has been happening over the last few years, and especially with the Trump administration, we have disconnected our laws from international law. We even separated from our own laws. The problem is easy to resolve. We have a huge problem. We have a huge issue there at the border, but we definitely put the forces there and the manpower or woman power. We haven't put the people power there and judges. So if we get to address the right force to deal with the problem coming in, then we can solve a lot of this in a more timely manner. We can rebuild our shelters. We can reconnect families. And if they think that this is an issue now, just you don't have to wait. As Rob was talking about, the urgency is now. We have climate change with droughts over there and flooding over here, food insecurity over there. People are coming from Africa, traveling across the world, not just Central and South America, are coming from Africa, around the other half of the world. They're not coming over here for a change of scenery. They're running from starvation. They're running from crime. They're running from corruption. They're running for all the things that our history has talked about over the years. So we have a responsibility and the international, to follow international law. We have a responsibility to follow our current laws and fulfilling our obligation to the world community, not just here at our borders, but the borders around the world. If they stop, this is not walk-a-mole. We stop them over here, so they're going to flood over there. They're going to flood over there. They're going to come over here. We'll never get out of this. So the plan, and I'm just going to make them write in shorthand here. The plan here, I think the Biden administration is on the right track here. We have to look at something like the Marshall Plan. How are we going to help food security? How are we going to help people to get water? How are we going to recapture some of this land to grow their own food so it can be sustainable? How are we going to set up an infrastructure to people to go to schools and hospitals and stuff so they don't have to leave their own country to come over here to try to get some type of relief? And at the same time, it's not about compassion. It's our promise that we have on the door. We're asking you to come here. We're saying you have reached a safe harbor. We have to start acting like it. This is not we have to stop the missed messages and get on board with what we promised the nation, what we promised ourselves, and what we put forward as an international message that we're here and this is a safe place. So we have to get in line with what our promises were. It is the same practice with our deported veterans. They're promised that if you go into the service, that if I get out of the service, you're going to look after me. If I put my life on the line for my country or for the country that I'm in, then you should get some recognition. You should get deference. You should get understanding. We're not trying to ask for something different. We're asking for what was promised to us, no more, no less. We just want the mechanism in place to make it work.
Thank you, Maurice. You put it very succinctly, and it's a very complicated, convoluted situation that, as you said, this immigration crisis is not going away anytime soon, and a lot of this is from the United States' own making because of foreign policy in a lot of countries that have driven people in desperation to the border, and we need to vote our values, put people in positions of power that can help people come to America legally to be safe, and also help people if they want to stay in their home countries by working
on
for
the people's side.
Working for the people, on the people's side. Our guest today, Maurice Martin. He's a U.S. Army veteran colonist from Berkeley, California. He's very involved with Veterans for Peace. He's going to be taking a lobbying trip to Washington, D.C. to lobby for H.R. 236, hashtag the New Way Forward Act. And he's also will be traveling down to
Tijuana
to support their efforts down there. Maurice, thanks so much for being with us today on Friendly Fire.
Well, thank you, Don, and thank you, Robert, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks, Robert.
Robert, before we leave today, let's tell people how they can help.
A couple of ways you can help. Number one, gathering a group of friends, supporters, and install a mural in your community. You can contact us at Leave No One Behind Mural Project, www.leavenoonebehindmuralproject, and we'll contact you immediately, give you all the details on the installation. If you can't do an installation, not a problem, but you can contact your elected officials, your friends, your family members, your organization that you may belong to. If you're a student, your classmates, your university students, very important, contact your elected officials, urge them to support raising the voice to make sure President Biden knows he needs to bring our deported veterans home. Fulfill his promise, sign the executive order, bring deported veterans home. Support H.R. 536, Leave No One Behind. The project is directed to bringing our deported veterans home, but also reuniting family members that have been separated by a broken immigration system.
And if people want to know how they can help deported veterans who are across the border in Tijuana, and not that that's every place that deported veterans are, but many are in Tijuana for solidarity purposes, to support each other, they could go to Unified Deported Veterans. That's one word, Unified Deported Veterans at gmail.com. Robert Vivar, who came to this country with his family at age 6, has been deported twice, now has his case before the California Supreme Court, and we're expecting a ruling anytime. Robert, we wish you so much luck with the outcome of that case. It'll be wonderful for you to be able to be back here. And one thing that struck me when I visited your chapter in 2018 is I walked across the border to Tijuana. It was very significant. But when I was able to walk home and cross that border back in the United States, I realized how lucky I am that I could come back when many of you down there have been prevented unjustly from returning to the country that you love and that you served. We wish you so much luck with your case. And again, there's a big push on now, H.R. 536, perhaps the best opportunity that deported veterans have had ever, perhaps. H.R. 536, hashtag the New Way Forward Act, and the mural project that is supporting that, the Leave No One Behind mural project. People can go to Veterans for Peace to find out more about that. Also, Robert, I see that in the lower left corner is a painting of you with about 13 or 14 other deported veterans that are depicted in the mural. And was it intentional? Did you ask them to make you look like a Franciscan priest?
No, I had absolutely no say-so with it. That was the muralist inspiration. And the reason you see many uniform as well as others is because this is about being inclusive, not leaving anybody behind. Inclusive deported veterans, deported mothers of U.S. citizen children, deported fathers of U.S. citizen children, kids that were taken to the U.S. at a very young age. Inclusive, we're all immigrants, and that's what has made the United States the great country it is, and will continue to make it, but that's only if we can be inclusive.
Rob has hit upon a point, and I'm sorry to break in, but I think this is important. We need to stop thinking of deported veterans as the other. We've run into problem across this in our country. If you are a veteran, you have served your country. They are family. We were talking about bringing families together, bringing our family home. These are not the other. The undocumented who served the country are not the other. We're doing them a favor. They paid up front on their ability to be our family. And a lot more than a lot of people who have not served, and they're serving in other ways, not to diminish, but these people put both sweat and blood in the ground for it. That's our family. They are not the other. Their family. We need to bring and rejoin our family together, bring them home.
And the mural very much depicts peoples in solidarity, because it isn't just about veterans, but it's also about other deported people, because it depicts deported childhood arrivals, dreamers, and deported veterans also. And just briefly before we leave, Robert, who is a dreamer?
A dreamer is somebody that was taken to the U.S. at a very young age. The dreams, the hopes of living the American dream.
We hope you enjoyed today's show with our guests, Maurice Barton and Robert Vivar of the Deported Veterans Advocacy Project. Well, that's a wrap here from the Sacred Feathers Studios. We hope you'll join us again next week here on Friendly Fire, a voice for veterans. Until then, stay safe, be well, and as always, peace and love.